This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode available every Tuesday. You can grab the hoe on the go by downloading the Apple or Android app for free. Or you can listen at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, or just throw our RSS feed into your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I am your host, and this is a special bonus episode of The Hollywood Outsider as we are interviewing director Kieran Foy. He is the director of Sinister 2, which is hitting theaters August 21st. And if you saw Sinister 1, it basically revolves around the ghoul. And this one follows Deputy So-and-So, played by James Ranson, as he investigates kind of the events that happened from the first film, while also simultaneously we are following a young mother, played by Shannon Sossaman, and her two children as they become victimized by the ghoul. And, well, it just goes from there. I don't want to ruin any of the surprises. Kieran was also the director of a movie called Citadel, which came out a couple of years ago. Really interesting horror movie. It's just really terrorizing kind of film. And I wish, if you have not seen it, I hope you guys will seek it out. Enjoy that. But this interview is mostly about Sinister 2. Nothing spoilery here. He really just talks about the movie, making the kill films from those films, you know, what the differences are, his approach to horror in general, why they decided to go with Deputy So-and-So coming from the previous film into this film. There's a lot of like interesting facts about the movie without really spoiling what happens. So it's a very interesting interview. Really intriguing director. Really look forward to what he has in the future. Scott Derrickson directed the first film. He was not able to do this one because he's out doing Doctor Strange for Marvel, and that's a big movie. Kieran came in and he took over the reins, and here we go. We've got Sinister 2. I think you don't really want to hear me talk anymore, so let me just get to the interview. Here's our interview with Sinister 2 director, Kieran Foy.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Kieran, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
I saw your movie yesterday. Are you happy? Are you thrilled with it?
Yeah, I kind of, the last test screening, because, you know, the whole test screening process is completely new to me, because, you know, I've only made one indie back home before this movie. So, you know, we ended up having three test screenings altogether, but the last test screening was such a joy. To experience with an audience, you know, there was laughing and jumping and all that kind of stuff, and you usually get to experience that on your, well, certainly with Citadel, it was like opening night at South by Southwest was the first time I'd ever experienced it with an audience, which was a horrible way to experience your first movie, but this was just like, you know, to see that reaction, I was like, well, you know, if the majority of people feel that way about the movie, then that just makes me ever more joyed, because I think as you go through the process of making a movie and you've watched it 200 times in the edit, you lose all sense of objectivity, and you're not really sure whether you know, you've got a movie that's great or a movie that's not so great, and so to see their reaction was like it was endearing.
Since you bring up Citadel, I mean, I really hope people find that movie. That's a really unique movie, and when it premiered at South by, it was a very distinct style, I think. And the way I understand it, it was based on your personal experiences, and you expanded on that. Coming off of that, was it really hard to find your next project?
It was, in the sense that, you know, when it won the audience award at South by Southwest, it sort of went on this, I ended up getting representation in Los Angeles, and it went on this kind of brown trip around the world where it was picking up awards, and I was being sent scripts from Los Angeles, and you know, most of them were terrible, or you know, found footage films and things like that. And I assumed that this was the process, you know, that okay, well, I keep getting sent scripts, and I guess I'll just wait until the perfect script arrives, you know. And you know, not realizing that, you know, in retrospect, you're hot for 2.5 minutes, and you know, by the time the next major festival comes along, those scripts have dissipated, and all that kind of stuff. And what you realize is you really needed that follow-up, you know, script in your hand to say, hey, this is what I want to do next. I didn't have that because my entire focus for the previous 4 years was just getting Citadel made. And so I began 2013, you know, feeling I was back to square one. So I wrote two scripts that year, science fiction film and a horror film. And I was endeavoring to get them off the ground, you know. And then 2014 came along, and January 2014, I was flicking through Twitter one day, and I follow Scott Derrickson on Twitter, and he tweeted, oh my God, just saw this movie Citadel on Netflix. everyone, you know, he was kind of raving about it, and I was like, well, that's cool. So I just replied and said, thanks. And so then he started following me and asked me a bunch of questions about Citadel and said, you know, I've been looking for the perfect director for Sinister 2, and I think I found him. Would you be interested in reading the script? So that's how I got the project. It was sort of this weird happenstance between Netflix and Twitter.
Wow, Twitter can be used for good. Who knew?
Exactly.
Well, now you're directing Sinister 2, which good job, by the way. And you're taking the directing reins from Scott Derrickson, who I assume was pretty busy getting ready for Doctor Strange. So What was it like for you? Because from Citadel, you have a very distinct vision, and now you're kind of trying to merge your vision with an established universe. How hard is that as a director?
I mean, I think one of the reasons Scott, you know, gravitated towards Citadel is, you know, I don't think we're worlds apart in terms of our tastes or aesthetic. You know, I think I enjoyed the first Sinister, and I think that the one of the things, certainly, you know, that I admire about Scott's work, and one thing I've tried to bring to Citadel was when you can, you know, a lot of genre films, you know, tend to treat the performances or the sense of reality with a little bit of whimsical winking to the audience that this is not entirely real, and you know, you're on this for the ride, and don't take it too serious. But when you can bring a level of drama that you normally get just within the realms of a drama to a horror film, and you combine that with horror elements, you know, like some of my favorite horror films, like Let the Right One In and Devil's Backbone, The Exorcist, all those kind of films, the performances were so credible that it just amplified any sense of terror and horror. So that's something I wanted to, you know, bring to this movie. And obviously I had to pay homage to the first movie's aesthetics to some degree, but you know, Scott was very sort of, you know, supportive in the sense that he was like, this is your movie. And, you know, the script is its own beast. It's not the same movie. It's not a mystery with Ethan Hawke watching these movies. This is the two central performers are 10 years old. So it was kind of this combination of paying homage to the first movie, which I didn't, from a directorial standpoint, I, you know, would share a lot of those aesthetics and tastes anyway, and then bringing my own vision to it. So that's that was kind of my process.
Well, this version of Sinister kind of does something I found pretty interesting, where you guys took a secondary character from the first film, in Deputy So-and-So, great name, and kind of threw him in, I'd say co-lead, just because the kids are also kind of a major factor. But can you talk about what made you guys decide to keep the storylines connected and promote James to full-time?
Well, I think, you know, Scott and Cargill felt he was the only character still left alive from the first movie. So they wanted some sort of thread to some sort of daisy chain to connect the two films. And so he was the natural fit. But I think what was interesting to me was the fact that they'd taken this essentially kind of comic relief character from the first movie and given him a central role in the second one. And so what you get is a character that I think, you know, from the first movie, audiences found very endearing, not just from the perspective of him being very funny, which James naturally is, but also, you know, that he is the audience. You know, he's kind of he's not your atypical horror heroes tend to come in, you know, either incredibly dumb and overconfident, or your atypical kind of action hero who's going to take charge of the situation, where most of us would run a mile. And I think that James' character is, you know, he's frightened to death of this whole thing, but in spite of himself, he continues on his quest, you know, to do the right thing. And I think that's why we love him. So making him a lead, you know, it meant that there was going to be some more comedy beats, you know, which I think this movie's got a little bit more levity in moments than the first one, but I think it works because it naturally comes out of James's character, as opposed to, hey, let's write in some jokes, you know. So I thought that was interesting, and yeah, I agree. He's kind of in the background doing his own, you know, investigation, tying the first movie to the second. But I think that the mom and the two boys are the center of the drama.
Yeah, Shannon is an actress I've been a fan of for a long time.
Yeah, me too.
It's intriguing to me to see a large portion of the movie unfold from the perspective of the kids you know, especially that the boogeyman, the creeper, whatever, is tormenting. And how that manipulation plays into the relationship between Shannon's character and her sons, especially Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
So why was expanding that portion of the mythology so important, do you think?
Which portion exactly? The
fact that we're seeing it from the kids' perspective, both
past
and present.
Well, I think one thing I really enjoyed about the script when I first read it was the fact that they had taken what presumably happened behind the scenes in the first movie. You know, not to spoil the first movie for anyone who hasn't seen it, but you know, obviously there's a kid who kills her parents at the very end,
mm-hmm.
and we realize, okay, it's the kids that are doing these murders, but we never see what has, you know, the journey she's taken from being a relatively normal kid to being this killer. So I thought that was interesting to show the kind of manipulation that goes on behind the scenes and how in many ways the disciples or the foot soldiers of Bagul or whatever are actually the ones that end up doing this, you know, as opposed to Bagul himself. It's not a spell he puts on people. It's more of this kind of game whereby they get the kids to watch the kill films, and there is a cumulative effect in watching these, a kind of hypnosis that happens. And I thought that was cool, you know, in that it wasn't obviously what made, you know, one of the components of the first movie that people enjoyed were the kill films, and you know, so they need to bring them back. And I think it would have been a little bit redundant just to have a character watching them. You know, the first movie was a mystery, so this can't be the same thing. But the fact that the kill films had a purpose, apart from the whole voyeuristic aspect to them for the audience, they had a purpose on and an effect on the characters. So that was something I really responded to, and in a weird way, sort of makes you look back on the first movie and see things in a new light. And you know, that final scene where Ethan Hawke sees that the projector has been on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get now what must have went on.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Actually, when I walked out, I thought the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for you as a director, what's more challenging, directing those home videos where you kind of have to pretend like you're an amateur, or finding creative ways to show a villain that he's really more of a presence than a real antagonist?
Sure, yeah. I think the first kill films were challenging from the point of view of the cameraman who were shooting it, because like you say, you have to suddenly become amateur. You have to be, you know, there's a 10-year-old behind that camera. So a lot of the camera guys have spent decades ironing out anything, you know, in their work that would seem amateur. So that was a challenge, you know, to just give them that feeling of, like, obviously you're each of the kill films have a visual effects element to them. So they had to be shot a certain way and proper, and really some of them had blue screen elements and some of them had markers in there where creatures would be. So it was a very professional, you know, process into making them, but then in the shooting of them, you have to make it look like shit. and so that was a process. That was a hard one to do. And I think, you know, the answer to the second one about, you know, Bagul and it, you know, I think finding novel ways to sort of, you know, have him, you know, be this specter in the background it was something that we, you know, myself and Bill Bowes, the production designer, spoke about a lot. You know, and if you watch the movie, there's a lot of shapes happening in the house and the church that,
mm-hmm.
you know, would echo Bagul. You know, he's got a very definitive silhouette, especially in his eyes. They're sort of like perfect triangles, and so we brought that shape into a lot of the production design just to give this. I sort of did that with Citadel as well, you know, made the tower block shape be something that was prominent, and we trapped the characters within rectangles a lot of the time, and most of the audience should never notice it, but hopefully it has a subconscious effect on you, so you feel that in many ways he's ever present.
Okay, when it comes to horror, so much of it today is based on jump scares or gore,
mm-hmm.
but you seem to rely a lot more on atmosphere, so I'm curious what kind of horror or terror, as you know, the old Hitchcock analogy went, terror in film gets you the most. I mean, what really works for you?
Well, I'm glad you made that observation. I mean, I think that for me, atmosphere is key. All my favorite horror films, you know, sort of drip in this atmosphere, and it's it's not an easy thing to do because you have to, every department has to be singing from the same hymn sheet, you know, and so it's not just your sound design, it's not just your music, it's not just your production design, it's not just how your angles and how you'll shoot it or your performances, it's everything. And I think, you know, for me, I really respond to horror films that leave me sort of, you know, with that feeling whereby, you know, it gets under your fingernails and sticks with you for days, whereas I think if you just watch a movie that is, you know, just full of cheap jump scares, then, you know, as soon as the credits come up, you forget about it, and maybe you had a good time, and it's more like a roller coaster journey. But I love the horror films that stick with you, and you know, for me, like some of my favorites, like I think The Mothman Prophecies is an underrated horror film. I think that's what led me to Tom and Andy, and they scored Citadel. But Mothman Prophecies, Jacob's Ladder, you know, movies like that where it stays with me and sticks with me for many years after I've seen them.
Well, thanks for your time. I gotta let you go. I know you gotta probably got a junket to finish.
Yeah.
But thanks for everything, and I really wish you the best on the movie. It's really good.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Cheers.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
There was our interview with Kieran Foy, and really interesting guy, really open director. I really look forward to what he brings in the future. I will tell you, in terms of the movie, I enjoyed it more than the first film. I found it to be a little bit more atmospheric, which we talked about in the interview. I just genuinely enjoyed it more. I really liked that they gave a secondary character front and center. I thought that was interesting. Shannon Sossaman is an actress I've always been a fan of for years. She's just been an intriguing actress to watch, and you might have just seen her on Wayward Pines. She played Matt Dillon's wife in that as well, if you're curious, if you can't place her quite yet. It's a good movie, and I enjoyed it. We don't get a whole lot of decent horror movies these days, and so if you're looking for something that hopefully unnerves you a little bit, I think Sinister 2 might do the trick. Check it out. August 21st in theaters nationwide. Well, I want to thank Kieran for coming on, and we are going to let you go. Remember, you can take The Ho on the go with our Android or Apple apps. Or you can go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. We're pretty much everywhere. And we have a new episode every Tuesday. Thanks again for listening, guys. And remember, the next time you go to a theater to see Sinister 2, buy popcorn.